Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome aboard. Happy Monday. And because it's the beginning of the week, baby, we get to do it all again. Coach Griff along as well. Looking forward to Greg Rigstraw joining us, Dustin DePierrick. We'll hear from some of the IU football players and get you caught up on everything that happened over the weekend. The start of high school football happened. We've got week zero coming up in college football this weekend. IndyCar racing was in the capital of the United States this past weekend with the Freedom 250. Talk about that with Greg as well and plenty more. How's Coach doing today?
Very good. Busy Friday night with high school football kicking off. And, of course, we're in week zero of college football kicking off, so I guess we're starting to get into the full swing of football season, and it's a nice thing to be in that part of the year.
It certainly feels like it. The weather has been absolutely fantastic. Friday night had to be just picture perfect for most places around the state for the kickoff of high school football, whether you're in Bloomington or Evansville or up in the region, wherever you may be across this state of Indiana, man. It was all going on Friday and Saturday. There were games on Saturday. A lot of games on Saturday in Evansville. We have to share stadiums and whatnot. But big games up in Fort Wayne as well. How was your weekend?
Well, we did the Bishop DeWanger versus Indianapolis Roncalli end up being a 3-overtime thriller.
Wow.
And the game finished 0-0.
That's how you want to kick it off, baby.
Finished 0-0. I mean, there was no scoring. What? I mean, it was a defensive battle, and it was, I would call it not a clean game, very sloppy at times, but in the overtime, then they, of course, both offenses had the opportunity, and then DeWanger decided that 3 overtimes was enough and went for 2 and got it and beat Roncalli. So I guess you would call that somewhat of an upset to start off the year.
And that's an argument to me for those that are all, you know, up in arms now of demanding to see these big time games within the first couple of games of the season. This is why. Those teams are not up to par. I guarantee you, if these teams play in week 7, this is going to be a different story.
Well, it was a different story last year in the state championship game because Roncalli last year beat Bishop DeWanger 3-0 at Roncalli. And in the state finals, Bishop DeWanger beat Indianapolis Roncalli to win the state. And it was a 33-26 game, I believe. So, I mean, to your point, you could see where the offense is finally kind of caught up to the defense. And week 1, that's usually about the first 2 weeks, you know, the defenses for the most part are a little bit ahead of all the offenses. But, you know, like Roncalli, they had 6 turnovers. I mean, you shouldn't even be in a ball game with 6 turnovers. You know what I mean? And it was a 0-0 yeah. game. So that's what I meant by it wasn't an overly clean game. A lot of sloppiness, a lot of missed opportunities. Roncalli had a block field goal attempt against DeWanger. You know, just those type of things that you don't want to see from a coach's standpoint, but they usually show their head in week one and two of a season. And even at the college level, those are the things that coaches are nervous about, is, you know, the special teams and things that maybe you've repped 1,000 times, but really haven't had it in a game type of experience. So again, that's part of football, learning to correct your mistakes. Cause I guarantee you, both teams are not canceling practice today.
That's a fact. And I failed to mention Jason Stahl from the College Football yes. Players Association will be joining us as well, as we'll talk about the state of affairs there, as Indiana received great news a while back in the court ruling out in Colorado that has now changed with a Friday court ruling that the NCAA won, which now puts players like Stephen Daly and Kellen Wyatt back on the sideline with a new ruling that came down. Of course, I'm sure they're still practicing because there's already an appeal filed or about to be filed. This kind of sucks here for these guys. These guys are in real limbo, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately, those are the guys that get the benefit at times, as well as the disappointment at times. And now, the way I understand it, I think most are encouraged them to file their own lawsuits in a state court to get an injunction against this ruling, or a TRO, essentially, to allow them back into eligibility. But you don't know how long that will take. And again, I don't think Indiana was in a big rush with either one of them to be ready week one. You know, we had talked about, you know, bring them along.
No, but you want to know if they're going to be playing or not. Well, because you want to get your rotation set and things of that nature.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, Sig even mentioned that when they first became eligible, he kind of gave the comment for now, because he knew that there was probably a possibility this was going to happen. So hopefully there can be final clarification with this matter.
This is something we can talk to Jason about. Because yeah. Is this just as simple as a decision coming down in a different state as opposed yeah. to Colorado? Because if I'm these guys, I'm just going to file in Colorado.
Yeah, because, you know, I think what lawyers end up doing, they shop their lawsuits to get a quote-unquote friendly court a la LSU yeah. in Louisiana with the NFL players, which I was reading yesterday, I believe, that the first NFL player may be back in college this week. He's from Ole Miss. I'd have to look up the name. It escapes me now. But that is already potentially going to happen. Dan Lanning came out very strong against that being a rule that allows that to occur. I mean, vocally out of it. But again, the craziness, the uncertainty, you name it, heading into quote unquote week zero. Here we are talking about who's eligible, who's not eligible, who's coming back from the NFL. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's crazy. And I don't know which way you go with this as a coach. I really don't, because it can be so disruptive in some respects, because of it kind of upsets the apple cart, I guess, what you were talking about. We'd like to know what we're going to have or not have. So I would approach it the way that most people do, is, you know, move forward without them, thought process. So,
well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Greg Rakestraw will join us, and we'll talk about the Colts preseason. Let's just call it a loss. And IndyCar was in our nation's capital for the Freedom 250, won appropriately by an American. Hey, lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio, back with plenty more. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday, kicking your week off, and not a better way to do it than with Mr. Ubiquitous, Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network. How was your weekend, sir? I know it was a busy one on Friday.
It was, high school football Friday night, Colts game on Saturday, Indy 11 game Saturday night. I had the Indianapolis Indians on Thursday night. I had a basketball doubleheader yesterday at the Indiana State Fairgrounds for a high school all-star game. And I have a college soccer game at 3. So I'd say that's I think I got my bases covered. So I think I lived up to your nickname. I appreciate that.
If it weren't for Don Fisher, you'd have about 4,000 Sportscaster of the Year awards.
I'll tell you what. We'll have a visual show. Be right back. Just don't go to break. It'll take me 3 minutes. Oh, about 3 minutes. That'd be 30 seconds. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
But since we happen to be doing this, from my kitchen, which turns into my office, here's the one that Don let me have, okay? That's the one from 2 years ago. So he's got the other 407. That's the one that I got right there.
Well, Greg deserves a lot more than he's got. And like I said, but he is Mr. Ubiquitous. I saw that the Indy 11 were playing Louisville, and I'm like, man, I said, I need to try to listen to that, but I was watching something else. Like, I know Greg's on the call for that and blah, 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 back and forth. But a lot of stuff going on in it as we're getting ready for college football, and high school just kicked off. So I know that was a great start to your weekend.
It was. And frankly, I tell people, the crossover time of year is always the busiest time of year. So like my busiest months are November and May because of what's wrapping up and then kind of what's getting started. And obviously, Indy 500. As that during the course of the month of May, my docket isn't as full in August. And I say that acknowledging what this is the, fifth day of a 5 day stretch of all kind of different stuff and sports, et cetera. But I'm kind of like a monk for a couple of weeks in August because the 3 or 4 days before the first preseason game, I've got to have 90 faces, names, helmets, kind of committed to memory. I've got like a paragraph on every player and some guys more than that from a Colts perspective. Once you get that done for week one, you just kind of make some changes, update stats, for games 2 and 3 or work in 4 or 5 new players, like kind of like the Colts had last week. And then when it comes to the start of the high school football season, there's the prep that goes into that. But Jim, as I wear a couple of different hats. I'm the guy that kind of leads the sales department as well for what we do in high school football. So last week was about getting everybody spots together and reads and fun stuff and putting together logs and scheduling and all that kind of fun stuff.
All the fun stuff.
But then most of, well, what keeps a roof over my head. But then once you kind of do that for week one, then, most of that work is done. You're just kind of tweaking things. So like I basically built, last night's log for Hamilton Southeast to North Central on Friday night. Just kind of moved some stuff around and know what we have left to sell on that front. So it's kind of like the weather this week. It's taking a break. Kind of like me, all of a sudden I've got all of this open time in my calendar. I'm like, taking a walk, kind of sounds nice. Doing something resembling a workout, might be a good thing, So all of a sudden, Jim, while yes, I stay busy, I think I've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got 5 nights of play-by-play or 5 events of play-by-play this week. Believe me, my life is a lot more laid back.
Well, that's a good thing because there's plenty more coming at us as the high school season has started. And the coach had a game this weekend as well. But you've got week 0 in college football starting this weekend. We also had IndyCar racing in our nation's capital over the weekend with the Freedom 250. And it was actually a fun race. Partly because Alex Palou was not Alex Palou. He became shown to be human. He had not one, not two, but 3 incidents that kind of knocked him out of the running for anything going on. The things that he never does. And the funny thing is, and I heard him mention it after the race, he said, I'm glad that those 3 things all happened in this race.
At one time, yes.
Which is what happens to everybody else all the time. They're always having those issues and he didn't. But Kyle Kirkwood, man, if it wasn't for Alex Palou, there's a championship, not one.
Kyle Kirkwood may not realize this, but he may fail a kinship with Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, Reggie Miller, other great stars of the 90s and early 2000s that would go, well, for that freaking Jordan guy, I'd have X, Y, and Z. Kind of like, me and Fish. So I understand, those things, Jim. So again, he's still got a 91-point lead. And when we talked about this last week, maybe even 2 weeks ago leading into Markham, it was like, hey, I don't think Pelosi is going to blow this lead, and I still don't think that's the case now. But there were 3 weekends where you go, all right, new course, short oval. So in theory, on a new course, you know, the team has not built up all this data for that guy to synthesize in the car to know exactly what can go wrong. They avoided Calamity in Markham, didn't win, but finished towards the top. Obviously had Calamity Corner a couple of three different times yesterday. And now, you know, I almost think the goal for Alex is, hey, just kind of finish on the lead lap, you know, be in contention, be top five, top 10, because, you know, A, you can be mathematically, you know, clinching of a championship for a fifth time in 6 years by the time you get to Laguna Seca. But obviously, once you get back to a natural terrain road course, that is where the 10 team truly is most dominant. You know, Kirkwood is kind of that guy on the streets. Palou is that guy when it comes to the natural terrain road courses. So, you know, mathematically, I think his lead needs to be 50 or 52 to clinch a championship after Sunday. So, again, it's still in the realm of possible, but not likely. So because this is foremost in my brain, the event I did yesterday used an Elam ending for the games. And there was a team that had they were 1 point away from winning, or two, yeah, it was 1 point away from winning, and they had a 14-point lead. And that lead got down to 4. It was kind of like, hey, this is still in the realm of the possible, not likely. And finally, that team got the win. So it's kind of the same thing with Palou. He is still the odds-on favorite, but maybe the door went from being open like this to being open wider than my hands are showing on camera right now on screen.
Yeah, and the chances of him having additional days like he did this weekend, not very likely. But yeah, you never know. It's why they call it racing. It's why they play the games, so
well,
to speak.
Well, on an oval, you are more likely to get caught up of something that is not your fault. Mm-hmm. And especially on a short oval, where you are running into lap traffic quicker and more often. And so do I expect his team to have the problem they had on pit lane again this year? No. Okay, scratch that. But having somebody get into your path, having somebody spin out in front of you, which is what happened to him in Phoenix, not of his control, you know, back in the second race of the season. So the short oval adds a little more things that are outside of your own control. Obviously, the team, you know, there's been Ganassi cars running there in different series over the better part of the last 30, 40 years. The team has all the technical knowledge of anybody in terms of running at Milwaukee. But there are things that can happen there that are completely out of your control that might bring him back even closer to the pack.
Like that big old bump in turns right in front of or coming out of turn 6, which I was watching the cars. I mean, their tires were coming off of the ground.
Again, it shows you how low the clearance is of those cars, because in an average car, you wouldn't think anything of it. You know, people aren't complaining. Those weren't gravel roads in downtown D.C. they were running on, but it shows you what the margin is for those cars. It's about like that.
And but just by listening, this was scheduled to be a one-off, and it still is. But, boy, it sure sounds like there is a greater and greater possibility that this could become something other than just a one-off, because there were the fan attendance was outstanding. The 100,000 available tickets were gone out of a requesting pool of over 290,000, I think, and just the uniqueness of this. But a lot of talk of this becoming, I guess it would be potentially a full-time stop on the circuit.
Certainly. I think IndyCar footed a lot of the bill. You know, I think IndyCar was presented with the opportunity and they took it. And I think it was a great thing, given the stage they have, given the much more expansive coverage that Fox as an operation, you know, kind of wrapped their arms around this. And again, let's state the obvious. Fox is the 1/3 owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, of the IndyCar series at this point. They are a true partner. But Doug Bowles was kind of free with the information yesterday, saying, basically, IndyCar spent about $35 million to make this happen. And I think that's a $35 million gamble or investment that was worth making. And so if the race were to come back, either, and nobody's going to like to hear this, either the federal government helps a little bit to make that happen. And while that may seem preposterous, that happens in a lot of countries when it comes to F1, for what it's worth. It's part of the reason why F1's not running in Indianapolis, frankly, is because there wasn't that assistance for it to be here. But secondarily, then maybe the city or the district in this case, you know, would kind of come in and support it. So I think IndyCar would like to go back, but I think IndyCar is making it known now, hey, we would love to come back. You got to help us financially in this for that to be the case.
And they probably should for what it brings in to the city, to the area. Visits, like I said, when you get that many people there that quickly, that shows that there's a lot of attention being paid to it. So, that was fun to watch. Great race. Just a couple more, three more races coming up, two of them in Milwaukee with the double this weekend and then to Laguna Seca to wrap up the season. So we'll see how that goes. You've got the busy part of your season just kicking off, no pun intended, but certainly to speak. We talked about high school football getting underway and even the college football. I know you got your hand in a little bit of all of that. So, man, it's gone now. High school is opened up. College opens up in some parts this upcoming weekend as well. So I'm looking forward to college football. I really am. I'm looking forward to the season and high school as well, but I'm ready for some football.
Of course. I mean, the defending national champions in your backyard, that's the way it's supposed to be.
It helps.
I've never had anything like this. I used to tell people in my program director days that high school football was a big deal on Friday night and college football was a big deal on Saturday. And the Indianapolis Colts own the other 5.5 days of the week. Like, we would talk Colts from Sunday morning at 6 a.m. until about Friday afternoon, about 4. And then high school football had their evening, and college football had its day. And then we went back to doing all things NFL. Well, now maybe we talk a little more high school football. We talk a lot more college football, as well we should. So my college football season starts Thursday. The monumental matchup, UIndy and Marion, D2 powerhouse versus NAI powerhouse, both of them being national tournament participants a season ago. Second time in as many years that these two schools have played, this time back at the alma mater at UIndy. My high school game is HSE and North Central. Normally where I would have a college game or a soccer match on Saturday, I've got this little preseason game between the Colts and Lions where some starters I think are going to play for the Indianapolis Colts on Saturday, and then a little college soccer on Sunday. So there you go.
Sounds like a blast, man. How was your weekend? What was the you did so much, but yep. I know you can't really say, oh, this was my favorite, but hey, did you have a favorite part of the weekend?
Well, here's my Saturday. So I'll let smokes behind the curtain. Soccer Saturday was taped this week, so it kind of had to be at Lucas Oil. And Lord knows I try to be two places at once. This time I couldn't. So soccer Saturday is really soccer Friday. So I was on the air on the fan from 9 to 10 on a taped version on Saturday morning. Pre-production meeting at 10 a.m. On Saturday. Kickoff at 1. Broadcast ends at about 4:05. Rick Venturi and I head up about 5 floors. The only benefit of the game being so lopsided, there was so little traffic in the stadium after the game, it was easier for Rick and I to get back up to the radio booth, do the post-game show on the network. Normally, I would be on in that scenario from 4 until 7. The Indianapolis Colts were gracious enough to let me skip out at 6 o'clock and Casey Vallier did the last hour of the show so I could then hop in my car. And thankfully, the distance between Lucas Oil Stadium, where the Colts play, and IU Indy, where Indy 11 plays, is all of about 10 blocks. So once I fought through whatever Colts traffic was left, whatever traffic was heading in to see the Indians, ironically play the Louisville Bats as well, I was able to make it to Carroll Stadium. So I signed off radio at 5:55. And I was in the booth by 6:21 for a 7 o'clock kickoff for the Indy 11 and Louisville. And I think we pre-taped the open for the television broadcast at 6:45. Somewhere in that 24 minutes, I had a chance to actually eat for like the first time in 8 hours. Not that I'm actually going to starve or anything like that anytime soon, but a little chicken teriyaki went a long way. And the Indy 11 beating Louisville for the first time in 4 years, that kind of helped too. That was nice.
Wow, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we have drawn them a lot. But in that rivalry, which and it's the best rivalry in our league, And the reason is because the geographic proximity, because simply put, how good Lou City is every year. We have not matched that. We have at times. We have not matched that consistently. But also because of, frankly, how great our fans are. And our fans are noisy, and they travel. And they show up in Louisville every time we play down there.
Soccer fans kill me, man. They do travel. They take the soccer fans are amazing to me.
Right.
Not only do they travel, they take their damn drums that they're gonna bang on.
Yep.
They've got the whole deal, and I'm like, wow, that's
and commitment. Sometimes I have to tell the audio guys and our crew, hey, don't mic up the Brickyard Battalion so well. There's some things the FCC probably doesn't appreciate getting on the broadcast. And so, for example, you know, our league has a handful of games every year on CBS or ESPN or ESPN2. First time we were on CBS, April of 2024, what game did they pick? Indy at Louisville. You know, for that, they knew the stadium would be packed. They knew the stadium would be loud. The atmosphere, you know, would be amazing. So it was good to see us pull the full 3 points. And we've had some really good home wins, but without question, that was our best performance of the year.
What are you looking forward to coming up?
So just the grind again. You know, it's a little bit of a different matchup in terms of week two, and I'm so ridiculously lucky. And obviously, you know, Brownsburg and LN. Brownsburg was really good. You know, Brownsburg has maybe a little bit more returning than LN does. LN gets a lot of attention, and rightly so. Monshin Sales going to IU. Zay Moore going to Purdue. The quarterback and Darian Prather is back. They returned basically four starters on defense. Brownsburg is similar number, but kind of has more guys that have played a little bit. And we saw that defense show up in the second half. It was 19-14 LN at halftime of that game. And then Brownsburg rattled off 28 unanswered points in the third quarter and put some distance between themselves. And they've got a young man named Brady Lewis that's their starting running back this year that played a lot as a sophomore. There was such talent at Brownsburg. He was the third stringer last year. Still ran for over 700 yards. He goes off and rattles 34 carries for 220 yards and didn't see the field in the fourth quarter. And so he's really good. Brownsburg probably has six Division I kids on their team. Another one being Brendan Sharp, obviously, is going to go to IU, who had four catches and two touchdowns. Their quarterback and Oscar Sloan is going to go to Illinois State. So they were the FCS runners-up. Nick Vakrumba, who unfortunately got hurt at their left tackle, he is heading to Kansas. Dami Shawunmi is going to Missouri, starting defensive end. So Brownsburg is loaded for bear. The other big results, Jim, from Friday night in high school football. Now, Griff had a great game at the 4A level with Dwinger outlasting. Dwinger liked their state championship game against Evansville Central a handful of years ago. Triple overtime to get to 15-14 that played out. But in the Indianapolis area and in 6A, the fact that Warren went to Center Grove and beat him again, like what happened in the regional round, we're down 14-7 and won 20-14 and had a goal line stand to win it at the end, is big. And in theory, Ben Davis should beat Cathedral, but I don't think much was thought of this Ben Davis team coming in. They were really down last year. They make a coaching change. You know, Cathedral is no longer in 6A, but is still thought to be one of the better teams in the state, probably the second favorite in 5A because of what New Pal has turned into, and New Pal beat Cathedral on their way to a state championship last year. Ben Davis beat Cathedral on Friday night. I think a lot of folks thought that was going to go the other direction. So I know Ben Davis and Warren winning should not be shocking, right? But that was kind of what got your attention from the Indy area and 6A football. But obviously the game that Griff was at, if you look at the non-6A, that's probably as big as any game in the state that took place on Friday night.
Yeah, I was
that's a lot packed into the weekend. Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, I was going to say the game that we had, we were talking earlier about it. You know, Ron Colley had six turnovers and should not have been in the game, but both offenses were young, and the mistakes and things you see in week one really showed up in that game until OT, and it was a great game. The other shocker to me was the Hamilton Southeastern Carroll.
Right.
Game that was up here, Carroll beating them like 50-34, but it wasn't even close. And Gabe Freisinger threw for like 380 yards or something like that. So, yeah, this week, Carroll plays Center Grove down there. Correct. That should be a good game as well. But yeah, it's, you know, it's full steam ahead now. I mean, you're week one, college football, NFL's around the corner. Colts did not look all that great, I guess you could say.
You're being kind.
Saturday. I know there's some, I would just tell people, don't jump off the bridge yet. It's, you know, let them get to the season and stuff like that, because right now it's really about valuation.
0-3 in the preseason, but then come back and start the season 5-0. We see it all the time.
Right. And again, it's a different day and age in terms of how you handle preseason games. Not a single Colt starter played on Saturday. Right. And if you went to the joint practices in Westfield, the Colts ones won. They were the better team. Again, you will see some starters on Saturday. Not all of them. You're not going to see Daniel Jones. I think you're going to see Keenan Allen. You're not going to see Jonathan Taylor, but you'll see a bit more. There's a little more stock you can put into the game coming up against the Lions, because there are not joint practices between those two that are taking place this week. So you'll see some more guys. And now that you've got, and this is, you know, kind of the post-COVID thing, you've got that extra weekend off in between the end of the preseason and the beginning of the regular season. So frankly, this is your chance to get your ones a series or two. Get them some reps, get them off the field, knowing that they got 15 days then until the regular season kicks off.
Well, brother, we look forward to your visits each and every Monday, because we know it's been a busy weekend before, and it sure was. And hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, fellas. Appreciate you. Talk soon.
Absolutely. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network joining us, as he does here each Monday. More coming up with coaches myself, Jim Coyle, right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Monday. Jim Coyle with you, and happy to be here. This, oh my God, this week is going to be unbelievable weather-wise. It's crazy how the temps are going to be perfect. Getting down into the 50s, man.
Wow.
It's fall. It's fall football. But this is still August.
I know.
It's shocking that it's getting down that deep. But so much for global warming, baby.
Yeah. And again, it'll probably change a week from now, and it'll be back in the 90s, as we see sometimes in the months of September. But like you said, we'll take the nicer weather that we can enjoy instead of the extreme heat and these thunderstorms that we've all experienced this past couple months. But yeah, I'll take it. It's good, because some of these press boxes you work in are not air conditioned. So when it gets really hot, it's like sitting in the sauna in those press boxes. So
I understand that. And so, plenty coming up, as you have plotted out the schedule.
Yeah.
This is week zero.
Yeah, this is week zero.
No calories. Yeah. No calories in this schedule, baby.
Yeah. I'm always amazed why they call it week zero, though, because I guess it's because it's not the full true kickoff of the actual schedule, supposedly. But there are actually some good games. I wouldn't like the fact that NC State and Virginia, who are on the ACC, are opening with a conference game.
Shocking.
Yeah, I'm not sure that one would be a great one from either team's perspectives, unless you win it. We'll get a chance to see USC play against San Jose State. That should be a interesting one to see how well USC does. And
possibly
good.
The beginning of the end for the Bill Belichick era in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, as the Tar Heels will travel to Dublin, Ireland, to take on the TCU. I forgot what TCU is. What
are Horned Frogs.
Horned Frog, that's right. Yeah. Going all the way to Dublin to get your butt kicked. But, hey, free trip to Ireland for the girlfriend.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. You know, TCU, of course, Josh Hoover is now a Indiana Hoosier. And we'll see who they have put in that position, and whether or not the turnovers that they seem so worried about with Hoover are either corrected or continue in their scheme of things, which I don't think it will, because the offensive coordinator that was there with Hoover has moved on to South Carolina. So it's a whole new offensive minded staff there at TCU. But that, you know, there's some games that are worth watching. I think there's going to be some good games, but it would be your typical non-conference look at teams coming up this year. What, North Dakota State playing their first game as a true D1 school? I guess you would have to call them a G6 school, as they
have. Oh, North Dakota State?
Yeah, they play host Jacksonville State on Saturday. And
North
that
Dakota
should be
State the Bison,
or yes,
North Dakota the Bison?
No, they are the Bison. North Dakota State is the Bison. So that'll
let
be
me tell you, I don't know what it is, but North Dakota State, South Dakota, and South Dakota State, all good in football.
Yeah.
All four of those damn Dakota schools are good and fun to watch, but good in football. Slinging the hash around, baby. They swing. Hey, Kalen DeBoer is a South Dakota dude. Not South Dakota University, but But anyway, from South Dakota. And I don't know what it is. The Dakotas, they produce some football.
Yeah, and you know, that those schools benefited greatly when the rule was that if you transferred from a D1 institution, the only way you could be eligible is to transfer down. So they would get guys from D1 that would come down to the 1AA level, which is what those schools were back in those days. And you're correct. You know, North Dakota State's won multiple national champions. And then South Dakota State, a school that, I mean, was okay, but then really became good. They won their first national championship, I think about 4 years ago, if memory serves me correct, maybe more. But you're correct. The football out there in that region, for those four schools, and think about it, they are the only football schools in terms of Division I out there in their each individual state. So for people out there, they look at North Dakota State as being their, you know, pinnacle program in North Dakota, and that's where everybody goes. They get great attendance, and North Dakota State has got some great facilities to go with it.
I agree. It's just been fun to watch. So we shall see. Looking forward to that. What are you looking forward to in this week zero, I guess, the non-calorie edition of college football?
Oh, I think it's just getting college football in a routine of going on Saturdays, you know, where you kind of
get started, baby.
Yeah. You get a chance to check all your setups for those Saturday games, you know, what you're going to do when lunch comes around, and you know, what's the dinner plan going to be that night as you watch multiple
Banners
games
and mash over in Dublin, Ireland.
That's right. That's right. So it's a great, thing to have, but go ahead. I got something here.
Yeah, and go ahead, and folks, don't forget to get signed up for the college pick'ems on the ESPN fantasy, ESPN.com. Just go to the right side. It says fantasy tab. You toggle that, and down you'll see college football pick'em. And I've got to pull up the intro. I forgot it, but We'll post that up here in a second, but don't be like me and forget to get your picks in 1 week. It destroys your entire season. So, but just jump in there and have fun. We like to have fun with it, and we always give away some fun prizes. Last year, Adidas jackets or vests, whatever we gave away. So we'll always scrap up with something good to dole out to the good people. And looking forward to it. Plus, it's fun. And there's people that can pick. These guys at the top, I've said this before, I'm like, damn, I just like to have some of these guys picking my betting games. They're doing too well. They're not just at 500. They're well above 500. So, yeah, pick some games for me, man. Pick some games, I tell you. I love it. Let's see what else went on over the weekend. Well, the Colts, we talked about that. That was 34-6 beatdown to the Falcons. Indiana getting ready. Dan Lanning, he has made, as Coach mentioned earlier, solid stance. Leave the football, leave the NFL players behind. The thing is, though, look who is the first, Coach mentioned the first one back. Where? Where was it? Ole Miss. Where? SEC. Of course. They're so desperate, they'll do any and everything. They're not going to do it. They'll be the last that does that, in my opinion. But I agree with what Dan Lanning says. Just leave them alone. Just everybody's looking for the edge, though. Everybody's looking for that extra that they can win that they can't do with what they're doing with now. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. Utah is suing the brother of Michigan coach, former Utah coach, Kyle Whittingham, but the brother is Freddie Whittingham, breach of contract because he followed his brother out, you know, up north to the Great White North. So,
isn't that amazing? I don't know. There's something there between Winninghams and Utah. There's a bad blood there or whatever, because that is a very petty move that I've seen an institution do. I mean, because you didn't give notice and didn't ask for permission. And I mean, really? That to me is a little bit crazy.
Well, this is a coach leaving one school to go to another, as we see happen all the time. But Utah is suing him for breach of contract, as I said, but basically because the lawsuit contends Whittingham abandoned his role as Utah's tight ends coach to take the same job at Michigan, despite being under contract through January 2027. I've always wondered, now, why sign these contracts? Because apparently they're not worth the paper they're written on. You can come and go as you wish. I've always wondered about that. So on one side, I'm like, okay, but this is pettiness. This is not for business reasons. This is, as you said, this is just strictly pettiness. They're seeking more than $300,000 for breach of contract, and at least $1 million for general and specific or special damages. Can't imagine what those might be.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of bad blood there because, you know, Kyle Whittingham has been very, I guess, vocal about the non-investment that Utah has failed to make over the years that, you know, put them behind.
They're trying to get some more money for that investment, Coach.
Well, that's true too. But they just, you know, all the things that they've done is crazy. And like you just said there, Utah was one of the schools that I think went to this equity firm or whatever and gave them certain percentage of equity within the department there. And one of the first things that group did is come in and let a bunch of people go, because they were no longer needed under this new umbrella. So I'm not quite sure what is going on, but it's not good. I can tell you that because of what's transpired between this
Kyle
situation.
Whittingham coached at Utah for 21 years. Freddie Whittingham, his brother, had coached there for 14 years. So this, neither one of these guys are guys that hasn't given a lot to Utah. And funny, one of the other things that I happen to see that Utah threw in there, that Whittingham also abandoned his role as Utah's I said that already. Where was I? Oh, he failed to devote full-time attention and energy to his duties at Utah, and that he actively recruited Utah players to Michigan while still employed by the school. Duh. I mean, come on, man. That happens at every single coaching change.
Yeah, and if the kids were in the portal, what else? I mean, Yeah. It's like I said, I just think it'll go away, but
it's part of life right now. But yeah. I'm not going to say that they're wrong. I mean, hey, if you're actively recruiting players while you're still employed, that's tampering. So yeah, there has to be a line.
And if he didn't give notice, you know, if that's what's, you know, everybody gives notice, even in the world of coaching, you know, now it's mostly understood that once you accept the job that at another institution, that serves as notice that you're no longer going to be at school X, and it's an immediate, not 30 days or 2 weeks or whatever you know, the commonplace is. But, you know, again, if you're not following the prescribed rules at that institution, then I guess there is some recourse that they can, take and try to recoup some of their money. But I think in the long run, that'll be okay. They'll get it. I think what they're asking for, total of $1.3 million, $300,000 for his salary and $1 million worth of, you know, I guess pain and suffering.
Goofiness. All goofiness. Chris asking about Jeffrey the Greek. Hey, if he can squeeze it in his schedule, that's always been the trouble in the past, but maybe we'll try to work around that somehow. But always enjoy having him on, man. He's fun. And big Iowa guy, but that's all right. He's very, very well informed. And so we'll try to make sure we get Jeffrey back on here. Let's see. Yeah, Brian talking about the flyover for the IndyCar race in Indianapolis, in Washington, D.C. It was massive. It was like, yeah. I guess that was a big B-52 in the middle, but it looked like some miniature B-52s on its flank on each side. But that was a massive flyover, man. But yeah, what a cool backdrop that was. Just the cars running, and you see the Capitol building in the back. As a matter of fact, they went by the Smithsonian Space and something else museum that they have, in which it housed the winning car from 1969's Indianapolis 500, in which Mario Andretti drove to victory. And ironically, it was one of his drivers that won the race on Sunday, Kyle Kirkwood. So,
yeah, I think he had three in that. Well, three in the top five. I think that's what it ended up being.
Maybe, they had a hell of a run. Having a hell of a run. Like I said, if it wasn't for Alex Palou, they'd be winning a championship in that organization. No doubt. But,
that was a cool setup and race. And like you said, the backdrop, they really set it up well, television wise, with the different shots they were able to get. And of course, the
Fox had a cameraman up in at the top of the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
That was a heck of a shot, man.
Yeah. And that's way up there. You know,
I noticed was it the Washington Mall that has the pool?
The reflection pool. Yeah.
The one that's got all much of that. There was no mention of that.
Yeah. There was no turmoil brought onto the stage. It was all,
and I will say this,
racing.
Trump needed to practice a little bit more with the waving of the green flag. He just was jumping up and down with it. It was kind of weird. I'm like, wave the flag, Donald.
Yeah. Was funny, of course, he was behind the protective glass. So he wasn't up on the, you know, the perch that they usually to let the drivers see the green flag. So as he was waving it, quote unquote, on TV, you could hear all the spotters saying, "We're green, we're green, we're green," to let them know that the green flag was actually coming out. So that's another interesting aspect of racing as well, is when you're able to listen to the communication that takes place, and it's just crazy. It was just crazy. I mean, you know, here's a guy going not Saturday, but going 200 miles an hour around a oval course, and they're getting spoken to in their ear, and they're having dialect that you're like, wow, how do you keep control?
It's a lot going on, baby. It's a lot on the oven, but, and we've got a lot on the oven, lots more coming up, as Dustin Epierik will join us, Jason Stahl will as well. You're listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle and Coach Griffith back with more right after these messages. I'm doing great. I hope you are as well, as Dustin is on the road, and he's going to try to patch in a different way than normal this week. But no biggie, as the Pacers are getting ready for their season to open as well as everybody else, it seems. But the Pacers a little ways off. But right now, the Pacers got a, not controversy, but the DAZN, D-A-Z-N, is known as it is, but it's a regional broadcasting partner currently for the Pacers, committed to putting their games on a subscription online streaming service rather than a traditional cable channel.
All right, can you hear me now?
Well, there you go. Just jump right in there.
Yeah.
But anyway, but you know, we're live on the radio here, brother.
Go ahead.
Not sure. Are you? But anyway, I was talking about the Pacers' decision to move to DAZN as a regional broadcaster with a online streaming service as opposed to a normal traditional cable channel. They were adamant that DAZN about making the subscription prices as affordable as possible. So I'm not sure that's going in that direction. And that's kind of an issue right now of Pacer fans who want to listen to the games. Doing it all, baby, doing it all. But anyway, I don't think the Pacer fans are liking the zone. While it was known there would be some level of discontent among fans used to getting regional broadcasted games as part of their cable or satellite package, so they wanted to soften that blow. They, and a quote from Pacers executive Joey Graziano, "We thought very closely and deeply about the price." He told reporters at an embargoed briefing on Wednesday, "The price matters. It really matters in this market." Well, of course it matters. It matters for a number of reasons. Number one, because everybody's getting hit to death, and we all know that. We are as well. But at first look, public reaction shows that fans who are already using a streaming app to watch the Pacers are pleased with the price, as it's cheaper than what they were paying. However, unlike DAZN, DAZN, whatever you want to call it, Bally and FanDuel were still accessible as part of their cable satellite streaming packages that operate similar to cable, and fans who are still paying for such services seem perturbed to know that they'll have to spend money beyond that to watch the NBA team. Basically, is you got to do what you got to do. I mean, there's going to be complaints, but if this is the way that they're going to go, it's the way that they're going to go. The market will dictate whether it's going to be successful or not. If there's enough outcry, it'll probably go away. But if it's just this is just initial outcry, it's different, it's new, it's a pain in the ass, whatever the case may be, it could change things. So we'll have to see how that goes. But you don't want fan discontent going into the season, especially like this season. You're going into a season coming off of a flop season where you basically dumped everything. You didn't have your star player, and so the hope was to get a high draft pick. That didn't work out. So now you got to regroup and come back and try to repeat what you did two seasons ago. And now this has dropped onto fans. You've got really, you have a lot of momentum. This is one of those momentum killers as far as fan and engagement go. But we'll see how that works. But I get it. It's because it's just another thing. And it's with anything else. everybody's got their own plus now. Except us, we don't have a plus. There's no Indiana Sports Beat Radio plus. Although, you know, people asking about when's Don starting again. It won't be too long, but advertisers. We need advertisers in Evansville, advertisers in Bloomington, advertisers in Hammond, Chicago. And if any of you that listen know of those, send them towards my way. You know, this stuff does not come free. So we've got to make it happen for you as well. Coach, you back with us?
I hope so. I don't know what the heck was going on, but
all right. No worries about that. So
yeah, well, I was go. Yeah, I got you. And we'll get Dustin on another time. He was on the road anyway, so
yeah.
Just one of those things on a Monday.
That's not a big deal. We've got plenty of sound from Indiana football, as a matter of fact. Who do we got lined up?
Well, we got the three running backs, and all three of them, if you're not excited about this trio, I don't know what will make you excited, because these three kids are sharp and they all have speed. It's good to see BB back in the fray. So I'll put him up and we can listen to BB Jr. Talk to the media after last Friday's practice.
Has there been a moment kind of in fall camp where you felt like, okay, I'm back? Or are you still waiting for that? Because you guys obviously don't tackle in camp. Like, what's that process been like for you?
No, first day for sure. When I first touched the rock, I definitely knew then, like, okay, yeah, cool, I'm back.
What was your rehab process like? And Coach mentioned that you're somebody who would put yourself a little further than everybody else, but how do you keep your reins in for not getting, like, re-injured?
Just try not to think about it a lot. You know, a lot of injuries happen whenever you think about it too much. So just putting the injury past me, just focusing on what I could do now, continue getting treatment room, and just keep treating my body right. Yeah.
Lee, I guess, what is it about running back that you like? Why are you running back as opposed to receiver or something like that?
I love running back because I can hit people. Like, I hit people more. I like running to people's face. So, yeah.
So Mike Guest and Colin.
How would you compare and contrast going against this year's defense versus last year's defense in fall camp?
Compare and contrast? Between this year and last year, I can say that our defense is still, like, unstoppable. Like, our defense is still great, but I think I can compare it to it has the same physicality, if not more. And it's just different. The difference between this year and last year, I'd say, is – got a lot of new guys on the D-line, and they're all fast, physical, and relentless. So, yeah, I say that's the difference, yeah.
You guys are obviously unique. You have three running backs who can all play at a high level. What would you describe your relationship is, all three of you, and how do you see that play out on the practice field?
Yeah, we have a great bond. All three of us have a great bond. Not even just the three of us, all the whole running back room. Well, between all of us, we have a great bond, and when we're just out there on the field, we feed off each other's energy, and that's what, and that's when we do great.
Go Lou, then Ian.
Coach often says, you know, how important it is to get the running game going in every game. Yeah. How often does he or the other coaches say that to you guys in practice and in the locker room?
Very often. They say it very often. They just want us to just get it in our mind that we just had to get the running game going, because without a good running game, it's not going to be a really good day. So, I say that.
We'll go Ian and Andrew.
What is it like to play for Coach Miller? What is he like as a coach?
Coach Miller, he's great. He's great. I say Coach Miller, he really just breaks down each and every play, so we all just make sure what we just know what we have, what our assignment is, where we line up, just things like that, just the small and big details. So he does a really good job at that. Like I said, the whole running back room, we all have a great bond, including the coaches, like Coach Miller and Coach Juice. We all have a great bond.
How much of an advantage is it to have an experienced offensive line in front of you, you know, creating holes each and every play?
I say it's a huge advantage, because everything isn't just black and white. Sometimes things get out of order, and just having that veteran O-line, they could just really sort that out. They play the game a lot, and they could make the right decisions moving forward. Yeah.
Mr. BB there talking to the media on Friday. Kind of great to get him back because he showed so much promise last year in his role, but he blew that knee out and it kind of just derailed everything for him. But he's got speed.
I knew it was a break for Indiana last year. You hate to say that about an injury, but when we saw Kobe Martin, how he just jumped in there, he took advantage of every opportunity that he got. When he got the ball, he did well with it. And then you had Roman Hemby and who was the twin?
Kalon Black,
yeah. Man, but you look at Lee Beebe, he's got the size. He's got that running back body, man, he's a bruiser. And you heard him. You heard him say, what's his favorite part about being a running back? Running over people.
Yeah, running through their face.
Running over people. That's what you want in a running back. Then you've got Turbo Richards, which we'll hear from. I mean, this is another running back's room that will bring, and that's part of the reason why Indiana's offense was so successful last year. They had every little compartment. The running back's room was not only good, it was deep, and it was different.
Yeah.
I mean, trying to tackle Roman Hemby or one of the other guys was different. They just had different positives about their game and the depth at that. And then you wonder, you know, hopefully you always hope for injury-free seasons, but we also know that that's likely not going to happen, unfortunately. And you hope that depth is there as well, because that was huge last year. Indiana, yeah, they had some injuries, but they didn't get hurt badly. At the end of the year when it was kind of wild with Wyatt and Daly, how they hit it. But it was unfortunate. But it is what it is. Hey, we've got to take a break. We've got lots more coming up. Jason Stahl from the College Football Players Association will join us. Got lots more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday, kicking your week off right, and joined now by Jason Stahl from the College Football Players Association. It's been a little bit, but Jason, how are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys. It has been a little bit. I was like, looking at my calendar, I was like, oh my goodness, it's been almost 5 years.
You have, and I know, and I don't know why I allowed that to happen. That is strictly on me. But this was when I had you on the first time, this was in its infancy at best, probably.
At best. I mean, yeah, I look back, we were probably like 2 months into things. And it was just,
I knew it. I was ahead of my time.
You were ahead of your curve. Like little did you know. Yeah, we were about 2 months into things. We kind of didn't know what we had. We didn't know what we were doing in a lot of ways, just in, you know, like, this is like right after NIL started, right? And so even sort of talking about collective bargaining when players aren't even being compensated by the schools, let's just say we were way ahead of the curve. But now we feel like here we are 5 years in, and it feels like the industry has really kind of met us where we've always been, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of change that has come around, but it's a lot of times it's been changed, though, just to get to this point. It's all the change that has to happen just to get to a point to start something else. And that's kind of where we still are, because we haven't gotten to a point of collective bargaining yet, where a lot of people think that is an eventuality. And there's still things that are going to change, that need to change, still lawsuits. I know that may come as a shock, but there's still lawsuits that are going to be coming.
We want to end the lawsuits.
Like right now, we're in the middle of Indiana's an example. They've got the two guys that were just made eligible by the decision in Colorado and then made ineligible by the decision last Friday. So there's so much goofiness going on right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to it is we're the guys out there basically saying, if you really want to end the lawsuits, if you want to end debates over eligibility, you need collective bargaining. And so if fans are, I don't know, in some ways sick of hearing about the latest eligibility lawsuit or what happened with the appeals process or having to follow too many lawyers on X or whatever it is. It's like the solution to this is collective bargaining. That's what we've been saying all along. I think it gives you the sustainable legal infrastructure to head forward into a new future for college athletics, particularly for high-level college football. I think if you get the Power Four situated, maybe FBS situated on firm foundations that include collective bargaining, these things are going to be fixed, and you don't have fans don't have to spend their off season worried about the latest lawsuit or what's going on with this class action or what's going on with this appeals process. You can just focus on the game, and yeah, sure, the game's gonna, you know, it's changed, but fans continue to be interested, of course, and you know, we can kind of do away with these kind of endless lawsuits and just focus on the game and let us kind of worry about the rules behind the scene and have those rules be enforceable.
What got you, what prompted you to do this 5 years ago when it was, I don't want to say it was the last thing on a lot of people's mind,
yeah,
but it probably was not at the forefront of a lot of people's mind because there were so much other things that were on the forefront that there just wasn't room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think that a couple different ways to look at it. I was teaching at the time. I was a professor for many college football players. And so for me, you go back 12 years, I didn't care about college football. I didn't think about college football. I mean, I'm like the least likely person to get involved in this. I think for me, though, in advocating for players that I thought were in need, that I thought were being treated unfairly, I'll just, you know, make sort of a blanket statement. What I found is that the institutions will defend the institution and the powers that be in the institution and not the player. And so, or not the family. And so for me, this came as a sort of passion project of, you know, advocating for players in need, feeling like they didn't really have any place to turn to when they were in need. And, you know, this to combine, I think the second factor to pay attention to is during that COVID summer of 2020, you had college football players throughout the country who were organizing for the first time. It was around COVID and health and safety protections, but broadly it was around players having a meaningful voice in whether and how they would play. And so you had these different movements, one associated with the then Pac-12, but then it was a nationwide We Want to Play movement. Trevor Lawrence was involved in it and others. And one of their demands was the creation of a College Football Players Association. And I was like, yeah, this is what's needed, totally. A couple weeks later, I realized it was really going to become a Twitter phenomenon. And I decided to take it up. It really was the convergence of those two factors of feeling like players in need did not have a place to turn to be heard, and the players themselves standing up and saying they needed a collective voice around that kind of COVID season, but then carrying it forward. Now, of course, I couldn't imagine all the places things have gone since in terms of specifically, I think, aligning our agenda of collective bargaining and a collective player voice with what I think the industry really needs. And so, yeah, we've been very fortunate that we were way ahead of the curve, but I think we were way ahead of the curve because of my own personal experience combined with that organizing that players did in the summer of 2020.
Ghost.
Hey, yeah, Jason, good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you, Shannon.
Full disclosure. Yeah, no, Jason, as a part of the CFBPA when it first came out and like the mission and what it stood for. Talk about the Stanford, you know, the football team there and basically them becoming a full team member, I guess you would say, of the organization. And what is it, you know, is the plan as that lead point for that group of student athletes?
Yeah, for sure. It's great to see you, Shannon. So we announced, it's been about a month, a little less than a month, we announced the creation of our first current player-led chapter at Stanford University. So we've been trying to find this for about 5 years. We've done a lot of different pivots, though, in terms of how we're organizing players, because you have to adjust with the legislative landscape. You have to adjust with where the federal government is at, the National Labor Relations Board, bunch of things. But for, you know, for your listeners, the most important thing here is Stanford University's reached a certain threshold where they had enough players who were members that then they became the first chapter to be able to elect player leaders. So this is an organization and organizational leadership model through a fraternity. So just to be clear, we're not a union. We are a fraternity of past, present, and future college football players. We want one day for players to be unionized and to engage in collective bargaining at the highest level of play. And to do that, we're trying to create this chapter-based infrastructure. And Stanford is really the first school that's come out publicly with this, that now we're using it to sort of publicly advertise to guys at other schools and encourage them to create a chapter at their school to ultimately engage, though, Shannon, in collective bargaining at the conference level. So we don't think that there should be collective bargaining. Like, there might be an example at some point to happen from within the school, a single school. Like, that's not out of the question. But I think to get to a sustainable, firm foundation for college football, you need collective bargaining at the conference level. So what that means, of course, with Stanford now in the ACC, of, you know, uniting with those other 16 ACC teams besides themselves and creating what's called a bargaining unit that will enable then those players to bargain with ACC management. We want this to, though, happen throughout college football, particularly the Power Four. So in the Big Ten, in the Big 12, in the SEC. And so, yeah, we hope to have flagship schools here before the end of the year and all those other conferences to then have that model for future collective bargaining at the conference level.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest question, I think, when people hear collective bargaining, some of those hurdles that probably are going to have to get over and what the answer is, I have no idea. Ultimately, do student athletes become quote unquote employees of an institution? Because that seems to be a big hang up that the institutions really don't want any part of. They just don't want that line to be crossed between a student and an employee at X university or college. What is the dynamic there to kind of get through that hurdle or that hump that seems to be a really big roadblock at this point?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I agree, but I do think we've seen a lot of change here in the past 2 years, but especially the past year, because you have the House settlement, which allows, of course, players to be directly compensated by their schools, not as employees. So we're in this strange, I would say, middle world where players are being paid. So like Indiana football players are being paid by Indiana University, but somehow they're still 1099s because it's a licensing agreement. You know, they're still independent contractors and not employees. These are two different legal classifications. Okay. So now, before players were being compensated directly by their schools, I think we and others were open to debate, well, are they employees? Is there some type of non-employee collective bargaining that they could engage in? I think, though, now the threshold has really been crossed where the schools are paying the athletes. They're signing licensing agreements, but I think we all know why football players are being compensated. It's not for the NIL. It's not for, you know, it's for the fact that they're good football players, right?
Or the it's fact not for their name. It's not for their image, right. And it's not for their likeness.
Right. And so I think given the fact that we've crossed that threshold, you've seen a lot of ADs, Danny White at Tennessee, you've seen a lot of head coaches, Dabo Sweeney of all places at Clemson, stand up and say, not only should we have collective bargaining, but they should be employees, because it's not the difference between where we're at now. Again, I'm speaking just of very high level college football players here, right?
Big Ten,
ACC, Power Four conferences, that they're obviously being compensated for their work as football players. And so they need to be making wages for their work as college football players. And then they will have collective bargaining rights under the law. Because as you correctly said, Shannon, unless absent some sort of federal legislation, they do need to be employees to have collective bargaining rights. Does that mean that every college athlete needs to be an employee? No, it does not, right? It means that those who organize, who everyone sees as, okay, well, we're paying these people directly from the schools. Now, the last hurdle you have to get over is there's a public and private divide, right? So you have Indiana University, for instance, a public school in a state like Indiana that doesn't necessarily have the greatest laws for labor organizing versus, let's say, a public school like here in Minnesota, much more labor-friendly state in terms of, you know, labor organizing, or a private school like Stanford, right? Particularly under the last presidential administration, we could have tried to unionize the Stanford football team because private schools don't go through state law, they go through federal law, which is the National Labor Relations Board. We think the way to solve this problem is to have the conference be the employer. The conference needs to be the employer, and it gets us out of this sort of trap door of the public versus private debate. Oh, Indiana players can't collectively bargain, but Minnesota players can. It can. It just doesn't make sense. Instead, the Big Ten is showing the way. I mean, I'm sure many of your listeners don't know this. Most people don't know it. College football players getting paid. We talk about the house settlement getting paid by their schools. In the Big Ten, they're actually paid by the Big Ten. They get their 1099s at the end of the year, not from Indiana University or Minnesota or Northwestern or USC. They get their 1099s directly from the Big Ten. Their licensing agreement is a master agreement at the Big Ten level. To convert this to employee status with collective bargaining is not a lot of work because you've already done the work. You have the master agreement that then would have to be obviously renegotiated with the Players Association, but then the Big Ten could still be the employer of record. It works really well. I think Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, has probably, given that he came from Major League Baseball, set it up in this way to make it happen. And so I think we just, you know, we got to get the players organized because players have to show that they're demanding this. And then I think we're on like a 1 to 3 year time frame. I think by the end of this decade, we're going to have collective bargaining for college football players at the highest level with the conferences.
Yeah, the Big Ten has definitely gone, I don't want to say out of their way, but they have done a lot of things that is set up via the conference. They're trying to, I don't want to say control it, but they're trying to keep out some of the minutia bull infighting or anything like that. None of this miniature lawsuits and stuff. It's like this, we're doing this as a group. It's in essence what you're doing, just on a, I don't want to say on a smaller scale, just on a different scale, but they're keeping everything in-house so you don't have 18 different vehicles going, which is exactly what you would have. And that's why we've got all these lawsuits, because you've got all these different schools suing in their own states, finding friendly judges, and et cetera, et cetera. So, this is something that would be easily done. But what is their biggest holdup? Is it the appearance of paying as employees when they can always be contractors? I mean, there's no reason for them not to be contractors and still have collective bargaining, right?
There is. I mean, so the legal question is to kind of return to that. If you want collective bargaining, they do need to be employees. Absent some piece of federal legislation that would specifically say that this class of workers as 1099s, as independent contractors, has collective bargaining rights. We're open to that. But I also think the more tried and true path is the employment classification and collective bargaining. In terms of what is the holdup, I mean, different people say different things here. A lot of people would say, well, the holdup is more industry stakeholders need to get on board. I kind of disagree with that. You have a lot of industry stakeholders that are not on board with this. I think they want to see if they're going to get one last bite at the piece of federal legislation here after the Senate reconvenes in September and before the midterm elections. I don't think they're going to get that. So I think once we get to 2027, there will be a lot of clamoring for collective bargaining. But the holdup, the true holdup, Jim, Shannon, the true holdup is players got to get organized. And they have to get organized independently of the schools. So the schools can't handhold here. Like we did, like at Stanford, the management knew that we were organizing because our two player leaders went and told them, look, we're bringing in Jason. We're bringing in some guys from the College Football Players Association to talk to players. Management was like, fine, you want to do that? That's on you. That was great. That's the response we want. The real challenge, though, is getting an audience with players to talk to them about what we're doing. I mean, my God, the work schedules here, guys, are just, I mean, I don't even tell you, Shannon, like the work schedules are out of control here, right? Just in terms of thinking about fall, we're in fall camp now. Fall camp's winding down, obviously. Season's going to start. And then, like, we hit the off season, it's always something. Now we're in spring ball. Now it's summer workouts. Now, like, I was out at Stanford in the middle of summer. It was still hard to talk to guys and get them all convened in a single room to be able to talk to them. So I think that schools, to the extent that they want this, really need to realize that part of the hangup is players having the time and mental headspace to be able to think about this, giving everything else going on in their lives with practices and games and classes and, you know, worrying about, you know, figuring out the money situation, everything now, right? It's like, to the extent that schools want to see this happen, I think they need to give players the time and space to organize it. And then, Lord willing, we'll get it done.
And so people understand, what is the actual goal of this College Football Players Association?
We have short, medium, long-term vision here, okay? And short and medium-term visions are around being a fraternal order, a fraternity that is a players association of past, present, and future college football players that can bring those players together and just very basically do good things for them. We can be there to advocate for them. We can be there to help them with financial literacy. We can be there to get them an attorney if they need an attorney, if they're trying to understand a contract. We're doing all those things already. In 2027, we hope to be rolling out some more significant programs that we would hopefully announce next year where we can talk to players about, look, this is a benefit of being a member of a fraternity. So if anybody is a past, present, and future college football player is listening to this, you can be a member. And so you can be a member of the fraternity because we want to show what we can do with the fraternity as we grow. Now, we think, though, the fraternity provides the organizational and leadership infrastructure to be able to form a union. And so there's a pivot here to a long-term goal of unionization and collective bargaining for college football players nationwide. And it's tricky because if you're just doing one or the other, we don't think it works. Because if you're trying to just form a union, players are like, well, I'll be done by the time, you know, this union forms, right? And you say, yeah, but we want you to join the fraternity because, you know, we want you to engage with the fraternity in the here and now. And then, yeah, at some point, like by the end of the decade, we're going to form that union. But at that point, we'll have educated you about what that looks like. Because a lot of these guys, the ones fortunate enough to head off to the league, the 3% or so that are fortunate enough to get a starting, you know, to be on an NFL roster, they go in there, they have no idea what a union is. Like they, in a lot of cases, right? They have no idea what the NFL Players Association is or what it does for them or what a collective bargaining agreement is or what it does for them. I mean, I literally guys talked with an Indiana player a few weeks back and like a lot of it was just a fun conversation where I was saying to him, hey, you know, like I'm just going to try to educate you on what a players association is because you want to head off to the league, right? Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, it'd be nice if your first interaction with a players association or a union was not walking through the locker room door and having somebody tell you to sign a union card, right? And so we think this is in the end is really going to help play. By the end of the decade, players are just going to be so much better educated on what the industry looks like from a business perspective and how it operates from a business perspective.
Because there's still going to be change that we don't know exactly what is yet as you get towards the end result, which you don't know if you're ever going to be completely at the end of that result. It's going to be ever evolving.
No, that's it exactly. And so you have to have the fraternity in place to be able to do the education. Like now we have the Stanford chapter in place. What we can do that now that we're in the network, but it's not just like us speaking as outsiders to them. They have elected their own leaders. So every guy in that locker room knows if they have a question about something that's happening in the world of college sports or where we are in the progression of the Players Association or where we are in the progression of a union, they know they can go to their elected leaders, Fisher Anderson and Ernest Cooper, who were elected the two leaders in that locker room. We're trying to use that NFLPA model through a fraternity to create a union. And yeah, I firmly, firmly believe that by the end of this decade, this will all be in place. And fans can, I think, enjoy the game in a new way and not have to worry about who's suing who and like all these lawyers. Just, you know, it's just we need to create that sustainable infrastructure through collective bargaining.
Any idea the percentage of current players that are interested in joining, want to join, want to have something like this?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't think I could put a percentage on it. I can only speak to my conversations and people associated with our organization, their conversations with players over the past 5 years, right? I think that the big thing, even though we've been around for 5 years, we've been really working hard, grinding this out day by day, trying to get into those locker rooms, talking with players. The big thing is that, like, even after Stanford, guys, you know, okay, we make news with it, but you know how the news cycle is, right? It just continues to churn. And so I've talked with a number of players since then, probably 10 different players, maybe 7 different schools since the Stanford launch. Guys, one of them knew about Stanford before I talked to them. Three of them knew who we were before I talked to them, right? So we're still working from that base.
Well, so much churn. You've got new players coming in every year, freshmen and guys going out. It's a constant churn right there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where the chapter model really helps. You need that leadership and organizational infrastructure that can handle the churn. Because take the Stanford example, Fisher and Ernest, there are elected leaders. All right, well, Fisher and Ernest are fifth-year seniors. So unless there's some sort of catastrophe and they get injured this year, this is likely their last season of college football, not just at Stanford. And so they head out of the locker room. We already have leaders in waiting who are going to be likely elected then as their replacements. That's the kind of thing you need to be able to handle that churn and make sure every locker room in this country, particularly every Power Four locker room in this country, knows who we are and what we're trying to do here. I want to put like a realistic time frame. I think by the end of 2027, I would like this organization to have visited every Power Four football program across the country and spoken with as many players as possible in person, because that is the only way, guys, this gets done. It doesn't get done on social media. It doesn't get done because guys are suspicious, and rightly so, right? There's a lot of predatory actors out there right now. There's a lot of NIL agents who are looking to skim a bunch of money from players. And so I think players and their parents are rightly, they have their guard up. And so
there seems to be no guardrails around what agents are allowed to make off of college players, as opposed to the NFL, where it's around what, 5%. And these guys, I don't even know what they're getting. They can get whatever they can get.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that truly only a players association can fix. The reason this does not happen in the NFL is because agents who represent players, I'm not talking about a marketing agent, I'm talking about somebody who's negotiating somebody's contract. Okay. They have to get certified with the NFL Players Association. They have to take a test. They have to be a lawyer. They have to and then they have to agree to certain stipulations to get and maintain their certification as agents. And one of them is capped negotiating fees for contracts. And so all of these bad actors, all these predatory actors, you don't see this at the pro level. Why? Because they have a players association and they have a collective bargaining agreement that adjudicates all of this and has rules in place that people must follow that are enforceable because it's written into the CBA. That's what we want to achieve at the college level. We do think in 2027, we hope to roll out programming that help with these agent problems, these agent bad actors. But really, you can't fully fix the problem until you have CBAs in place, until you have agent certification by us, and making sure that agents are following rules, making sure that they're certified, making sure they've been tested and so forth. Yeah, we need to get out two primary sets of bad actors. And one of them are bad agents. There are good agents. I know many good agents for college football players. So I'm not saying that all agents are bad. I know many good agents, but there are many bad agents out there too. I also think there are lawyers who have made careers off of eligibility lawsuits. And look, if a guy wants to sue for eligibility, I mean, I have lots of conflicting opinions about this, right? But I think it is their right, but I do think there is a sort of somewhat predatory attorney network that have made careers off of doing this, who actually guys don't want collective bargaining because it would destroy their business model. It would absolutely destroy their business model. And so that's another reason we need to get collective bargaining in place, because some of what these guys charge per hour or they charge for these cases, it's just like, oh my God, you know, it's really, truly unbelievable. And that's the kind of stuff we need to end. And I think,
Jason Stahl with us from the College Football Players Association. Lots of, yeah, it's you've come a long way in 40 or in 5 years, rather.
40 and, years.
well, I got looking at a comment and I got
you're going biblical on me, Jim. You're going biblical with 40 years.
I'm telling you, you guys have come a long way, but yet there's still a long way to go. But you guys are churning at it, man. Coach, anything last words? You're muted, by the way.
Yeah, no, again, it's just another thing that I think helps the players and them understanding that. And I think that's the biggest thing is the educational component that they don't have right now because of A, B, C, and D. I mean, if they're technically 1099s, reality it is for them to save taxes, they should be an LLC to protect their money and have everything written to the LLC, not to them. And those are some of the things that they have to, they don't understand. And
that's it. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Shannon.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jason. That's fine.
No, you hit the nail on the head, Shannon, because this is a big part of what we're trying to do that we can do as a fraternity, right? To provide that education. Because there's so many ways in which they're getting screwed by the taxation right now because the employer is not paying their side of taxation. Your listeners need to understand here. Like, I think a lot of people are like, you know, thinking, oh, maybe they don't pay taxes or something. Not only do they pay taxes, they get screwed on the taxes, okay? Because the employer, in this case, either the conference or the school or somebody else, is not paying the employer side of the taxation. So you've got players who are paying self-employment taxation. I mean, self-employment taxation should be reserved for people who are truly self-employed. We all know that a college football player is not self-employed, please. And so now, as you said, though, Shannon, there's a way to at least try as best you can to maximize that taxation situation, right? So if you are getting all these, let's say you get four 1099s at the end of the year, one's from your school or one's from your conference, one's from this brand, one's from that brand, they need to be going into that LLC, absolutely, because there's all sorts of ways you can use your LLC and deduct things that are truly business expenses, like your agent fees and other things that NFL players can't do. But you can see I can go on like this forever. This is why we have to get there in there as a fraternity to be explaining this to players, right? To be coming in with a banking partner that we're going to announce here later this year and saying, guys, let some professionals help you with this if you don't already have it, because you know, you and I both know, Shannon, there a lot of these guys are really getting screwed over come tax time because they're not set up well for this.
Jason Stahl from the College Football Players Association. I'm sure you can go find that if you just Google it, if you want to look it up and get more information. But as always, Jason, great fun, greatly informative. It's not going to be 5 years this time. We're going to stay in touch a little bit more.
Once we get that Indiana chapter, guys.
There you go. Give us something more to talk about. But appreciate you as always. Anything you ever need, let me know.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Jason Stahl from the College Football Players Association. More coming up right after these messages. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you. Coach Griff as well. Wrapping up a fun Monday. Informative. Recapturing what happened over the weekend as well. Back tomorrow with Mike DeCourcy, J.D. Campbell. Get you another full show in. How you like them apples?
That's right. Get your Tuesday off to the right start is what I say.
Well, we've already started the week off right, man. Great start. Great show today. Not because I was in it. I can promise you that. But, just fun stuff. Fun to talk about. And then won't be long, baby. We'll have nothing but sports to talk about. Games. It's right around the corner. And I can't wait. I'm here for it, baby. I'm here for it. I'm ready for some football.
Yeah, I think it's time. You know, again, high school kicks it off, and that just makes you want college ball even more. And it's going to be here this weekend. And pretty soon, then the fish comes back for his weekly updates and discussions. So he had a lot of fun last year.
This opening weekend, it wasn't Monchon Sales who had the eye popping weekend. It was the other
Sharp. Brendan Sharp.
Brendan Sharp. That just shows you the amount of talent, the depth of talent in the state of Indiana. That if Indiana could get that talent, which they weren't getting before, that is a huge help right off the bat as far as recruiting. But that's a road we'll go down a little further. In the week, but grateful for everybody, grateful for each and every one of you, grateful to Greg Rakestraw, of course, and to Jason Stahl, Coach Griff, and I'm Jim Coyle. Until tomorrow, I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.